everybody. It's Weird Islanders, the podcast, back once again. My name is Dan. That is Mike. How are you this evening, Mike?
Well, I'm jacked up. This is one of my favorite players ever. A player who I think at times might have been the best hockey player on the planet. There were some shifts where this guy just was mesmerizingly good. Mm. And I don't understand how it didn't click. Like, I just never understood how this guy was a journeyman, how he didn't just stay with the Islanders and become their all-time leader in points and power play points and have his name in the rafters. Mm. I am being hyperbolic, obviously, but there were shifts where you're just watching this guy like, damn, that was amazing. He played a huge part in a lot of my favorite games from a wonderful season that we had. Mm. And he really revitalized a team at one point when the Islanders traded for him the second time. Mm. He really revitalized the team. So and like really made me just a huge, huge fan of him. So I'm really excited to get into this guy. We've been waiting for this one. This is the third season of Weird Islanders. And yeah. This is a guy who, if I wasn't one of the hosts and I got to pick a player, I think he would be, maybe it would be between him and Chris Osgood for who I would pick as my Weird Islander.
This guy, in researching him, there's a ton of fun facts. The numbers are really strange, and he could be a weird player for about half the league, which is kind of funny. And he's just a very, very unique player. And I can't wait to get to him. I was so excited when our guest chose him. And let's bring our guest on now. He is a writer for Pensburg and for Bleacher Report and a few other places as well. You've probably seen him on Twitter, and he's just an all around great guy. And he's Adam Gretz. Adam, how are you?
I'm great. How are you guys today?
We are excellent. It's great to finally talk to you. We've known each other through Twitter and the SB Nation network for a long time. So it's great to put a voice to a name and get you on here. I think it's safe to say that this season for the Penguins hasn't quite gone the way I think a lot of people kind of figured it would. Mike and I, at different points of this season and talking about the Islanders on our flagship show, Islanders Anxiety, have talked about how sometimes it just feels like something is rotten on the roster. Like, it's, you know, these guys, sometimes they look good and sometimes they just don't. And we can't put a finger on it because, like, on paper, they should be much better than this. Has that sort of phenomenon kind of happened with the Penguins a little bit, or is there something more tangible that you can point to?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. If you look at them on paper, you look at the top of the lineup and Sidney Crosby's still playing at an outrageous level. Seriously. For a guy that's, what, 36 years old now? Right. He's still one of the best players in the world. You know, Chris Letang is still playing well. They trade for Erik Karlsson. There should be something. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't worked. Mm-hmm. You look at the power play they can put on the ice. It's terrible. It's awful.
It's really wild. it's so bad.
It's not just bad. It's awful. Like, it's actively losing them games.
Wow.
There's been... Off the top of my head, I can count two games this season where they have had a power play in a tie game with less than 2 minutes to play, and they have lost in regulation. And in one of those games, that power play was a two-man advantage.
Oh, my God.
Oh, I remember that one.
That was Anaheim, right? Early this season. Mason McTavish came out of the penalty box and scored with like 30 seconds left in regulation. Yeah. And I think there's a couple things at play. Number one, you know, those guys that I just mentioned, they are older. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Evgeny Malkin has shown that more than Crosby and Letang have. He's clearly a fraction of what he once was. And I think they've just made a series of bad decisions with the roster around those guys.
Yeah.
And you know, it goes back over pretty much three general managers now. And it started after they won that last cup in 2017, when Jim Rutherford decided it wasn't good enough to just win the games. He also wanted to win the fights. So he went out and traded for Ryan Reeves.
Yes.
Which was a complete 180 from the way those teams played. Like those, I mean, that team had Phil Kessel skating on the third line. They were that deep offensively, and that wasn't good enough. So he went, and he was, and I remember, I believe it was before game one of that Stanley Cup final against Nashville. He was literally talking about how he needed to go and get somebody to fight. Like he's getting ready, and I'm just sitting there like dumbfounded. Like, am I in bizarro world here? Like, what? Yeah. What? Like, are you watching the team you've built?
Yeah. And that reminds me of Eugene Malkin talking about how the Senators might move just before they're about to host an outdoor game.
Yeah.
Like right in front of Parliament. Like, dude, what are you doing? Like,
what is your timing here, man?
Right.
And he was just so mad. Like, yeah. and it all goes back to one guy. It all goes back to Tom Wilson.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Tom Wilson absolutely got so far into their heads that it completely changed the way they built their team. And that was when they were beating Tom Wilson's team. Like, and that, that's like, funny. From that point on, Rutherford just completely shifted the way he built the team. That kind of resulted in them taking a step back. Then he abruptly leaves, which nobody fully understands why.
Huh.
And then they hire Ron Hextall.
Former Weird Islanders star, Ron Hextall. We did a whole episode on him.
I can absolutely imagine that. And that two-year run was such a disaster.
Yeah.
Like, they lost Jared McCann for nothing. Like, you know how every team in the NHL royally screwed up the Vegas expansion draft? And then everybody learned their lesson when Seattle came in. Everybody except Ron Hextall learned his lesson because he lost Jared McCann and Brandon Tanev so he could protect Jeff Carter in that expansion draft, which was just a terrible decision. Pretty much everything Hextall did was a disaster. So he gets fired. They bring in Kyle Dubas, and this is kind of where things... There seems to be two different factions of opinions in Pittsburgh right now, where there's one group of people that thinks Kyle Dubas was brought in to eventually start the rebuild and be the person that guides that. There's another group of people that thinks he was brought in to try to maximize what was left of Sidney Crosby's career.
Right. Yeah.
And when you look at the roster moves they made this offseason, it's clear which one he was trying to do this season.
Yes, like, seriously.
Almost every player he acquired was somebody over the age of 30 that has a multi-year contract. Yeah. Riley Smith had 2 years left and they traded for him. Erik Karlsson has 4 years left. He signed Nola Chari for 3 years. He signed Lars Eller for 2 years. He signed Ryan Graves for 6 years. Those aren't the types of moves you make if you're brought in to usher in a rebuild.
Yeah, seriously.
And other, like, Karlsson hasn't been bad, but he hasn't been what they expected. He's been good when they expected Norris Trophy and 100 points. Now, that might have been an unrealistic expectation, but I think the expectation was he would come in, he would be a difference maker, he would fix the power play that wasn't very good a year ago, and it just hasn't happened. But I wouldn't say he's been a problem. He just hasn't been what they hoped.
Yeah. So, yeah, something on the roster is weird. Yeah, I totally
hear
you.
And then the other guys they brought in, like, he had to overhaul the bottom six, and he tried to build this group of players down there that could defend, but nobody can score. So now they're pretty much a one line team.
Yeah.
And you can't win in the NHL with one line. And I think that's where it's really gone wrong. And I also think Mike Sullivan, for as great as he's been with the Penguins, I think sometimes a coach and a team just reach their breaking point where it's time to move on. And it doesn't necessarily mean that he's a bad coach. Sometimes you just reach a point where the message doesn't get through anymore. I think they're there. He hasn't adapted much to the team getting older. I don't think anybody expected them to win a Stanley Cup this season here.
Yeah. We are recording this a couple of days before the trade deadline. And listen, there are going to be 31 teams dying for the Penguins to fire Mike Sullivan at the end of the season. So I don't think anybody thinks he's suddenly forgotten how to coach. But hey, listen, you know, two Stanley Cups and he's been there. It's a 10 years or close to 10 years. That's a long time. For a coach.
2015-16, that 2015-16 season, he came in halfway through.
Right.
He replaced Mike Johnston.
That's right. That's right. So, you know, you're looking at 8 years. That's a long time. And I mean, you can't argue with the success. So, yeah, no, it's funny. Like, I remember when people complaining all the time about Barry Trotz when he coached the Islanders. And then once the Islanders let him go, I saw tweets from everywhere being like, oh, my God, my team's got to hire this guy. Well, it was like, wait, hold on a second. Like, hold on a second. Is he the scourge of the NHL or is he the guy who's going to save your franchise? It's one or the other. So, well, yeah, I mean, it's been fascinating to watch. And I'm sure it hasn't been a lot of fun if you're a Penguins fan and a Penguins writer such as yourself. But, you know, the good news is that everybody at the Athletic is watching. So that's the most important thing, because their favorite son is running the team. But we are here to talk about a very different era in Penguins hockey. And that might be good or it might be bad. I don't know. We'll ask you. And we have a very fascinating Penguin here and a former two-time Islander and a whole lot of other things. So let us get to him today. Let us talk about our featured guest, Adam Gretz. Will you please reveal the subject of tonight's episode of Weird Islanders, the podcast?
Tonight's Weird Islander is none other than Randy Robitaille.
I can already hear Mike getting ready. He's all getting right. Amped up. Hold on. I'm going to throw it to you in a second. Before we do, reminder that we are on Patreon, patreon.com/IslandersAnxiety. Ad-free episodes, bonus content, a whole lot more. Sign up today. Mike, when you hear the words Randy Robitaille, what is the first thing that you think of?
The Islanders goal horn at the Nassau Coliseum during a power play. Yes, and I'm not even kidding.
Goal horn, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, the best goal horn.
Yes.
And there was just magic in this guy's hands when he was with the Islanders somehow. And there's one game in particular that sticks out. And it's a game I talk about all the time. And, you know, it's perfect because it actually was against the Penguins. In that's 2006-07 season when the Islanders made that miracle run into the playoffs with Dublowitz. And there was a turning point game in that season when the Penguins were riding a 16-game point streak, and the Islanders played them. The Islanders were in desperate need of a win. They had traded for Marc-Andre Bergeron a few days before, so they were kind of dipping their toes into being a buyer, but they were in pretty poor form, and they were looking to rescue the season, and they were playing really well against the Penguins in this game. Ryan Malone, as he always did, had a hat trick against the Islanders
killer.
In this game.
Absolute Islanders killer. I could never figure it out.
Oh,
crazy.
God. And this game was just, it was incredible. So Malone's opened the scoring like a minute in. Victor Kozlov got the Islanders tied 1-1 about, you know, 15 minutes later, and Bergeron had an assist on the play. I was at this game. The Coliseum is rocking because Bergeron, I think it was his debut, and Mark Recchi scored right before the intermission. Then Malone scored a minute in. This was his hat trick game where he scored all three goals in the first minute of each period.
Oh my God.
So he scored in the first minute of the second. All of a sudden, it looks like the Islanders are about to be dead in the water. And then the Randy Robitaille show starts.
Oh, nice. Referee Don Koharski made the call. Here's Robitaille centering, and Simon scores. Took the Islanders a minute and 14 seconds to get it back. Neither team wants 26 straight games without a goal. And so the Islanders now within a goal. Blake draws a penalty. Robitaille to Blake. He scores! And the Islanders have tied it. There was going to be a penalty. Jason Blake, who had not scored in his last eight, has tied it 3-3. Two goals in 15 seconds. Robitaille up to the Pittsburgh line, across to Simon, he scores! Chris Simon had not scored in 26 games. He has two in this one. It took a minute 11 for the Islanders to get it back, and we're even 5-5. And so many
many times in this game. It looked like the Penguins were on the verge of grabbing control of it.
Robitaille, the third star of this game. Great dishes in the second period. Great pass.
Sillinger with a game-winning goal. How about Chris Simon with two?
And the first star from the
Islanders,
number 12, Chris Simon.
Well, the Chief came to play today.
And he sets up Chris Simon for the first time in the night. Then he sets up Jason Blake. The Islanders then go up 4-3, then it's 4-4. Malone scores again for the hat trick. And then Randy Robitaille gets right back to work a minute later and sets up Chris Simon. And the game ends up culminating with a Mike Sillinger goal with about 30 seconds left in regulation after a shift where Crosby had the puck for like 2 minutes on his stick below the Islanders' goal line. And there was one point where Rick DiPietro was like trying to poke check him away. Like he basically skated out of the crease. But what I remember about this game was that, and I'm not kidding you, like when I made that statement off the jump, Randy Robitaille was the best hockey player on the planet that night. Like there was nobody that could stop that guy. He had three assists on the night. He was running the kind of the trigger man, or I should say like the kind of the string puller on a power play where the three forwards were him, Victor Kozlov, and Aaron Asham.
Jeez. And Aaron Asham on the power play?
Yeah. And there's a great, you know, our guy Sab on YouTube has a whole, you know, 20 minute video about this game. And there's a big Howie Rose is like talking about how Asham's on the power play and the Islanders need to uncork that shot. And who's like just absolutely working magic on this first period on this power play, but Robitaille. Drawing people to him, finding space. He was so good this night. And I just remember thinking, like, the Islanders, they have something here.
Yeah.
But then you think, or, you know, back then I wouldn't think this, but you look at his hockey reference page and that part of the site that's just reserved for the players' numbers.
Oh, my God.
Randy Robitaille has 3, 6, 9, 11, 13. Different squares with a number in it.
Yeah.
That guy's the best player in the world.
He could be a weird million different things. He could be a weird Bruin, a weird Penguin. He could be a weird King. He could be a weird Wild. He could be a weird Fly. The only team he couldn't be weird for is the Nashville Predators, because he showed up in their second year. So not the inaugural Predators, but I guess the second inaugural Predators, whatever you call it, and played 131 games there. But yeah, he this guy has bounced around a lot. And I got to be honest, I am shocked that somebody other than like a Predators fan or another Islanders fan would have picked Randy Robitaille. So Adam, like I gave you a smaller list of, you know, kind of Islanders, Penguins. There were some really wild names on there. I'm hoping to get on this show at some point. But like, what made Randy Robitaille jump out on that list of Islanders and Penguins? Because again, I'm shocked that anybody even remembers this guy outside of us, basically.
So there's actually a couple of things, and the way Mike was talking about watching Randy Robitaille, that's kind of the way that I remember his time in Pittsburgh.
That's funny.
Because this was his time in Pittsburgh. This was in that weird time between Jaromir Jagr, after Jagr was traded, and before Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, so I'm glad you're talking about this, because I do want to talk to you about this, but yeah, continue.
There was that 3-year stretch where they just tanked. They absolutely bottomed out. And in a couple of those seasons, they were just claiming anybody they could get on waivers. They were trading for any bottom of the lineup player that they could get to just fill out a lineup and try to have like a somewhat competitive NHL team. Mm. And Randy Robitaille was one of those guys. And when he first got to Pittsburgh, he was surprisingly productive.
Right.
And there I remember, like, and I was in, I think I was a senior in high school at this time. It was somewhere around like senior year of high school, first year of college. And the Penguins were so bad at this time and interest in them had really dwindled. And to get people into the building, they introduced this program called the Student Rush Program, where you would an hour before the game, hour before puck drop, if you showed up at the ticket window with a valid student ID or report card or anything that showed you were a high school or college student, you would get the best available seat for $20.
Gee.
And we made a habit out of going to those games. We were sitting like three rows from the glass watching just terrible hockey, but loving every minute of it.
That's and so funny.
Randy Robitaille was one of those, like, somebody on, like, on bad teams, somebody's going to get the goals. There's going to be somebody that's going to get power play time. They're going to get top line time, and they're going to come out of nowhere and have a surprisingly good year. And I think Randy Robitaille just happened to be one of those guys for those Penguins teams. And he played really well. And I remember going up to that trade deadline. There was talk that, oh, they might be looking to trade Randy Robitaille. And I remember me and my group of friends just like being angry at that thought. Like, no, you can't trade him. Like, he's the only guy scoring right now. What are you doing? So it was just hilarious listening to Mike go into that story, because I'm sitting there thinking, that's how I felt about Randy.
Yeah. You know what's funny is the Islanders had a similar program. I think it was, yes. I can't remember what it was called, but the year that I used it and abused it was the Randy Robitaille years. Like, yeah. So Randy Robitaille was just, people were, he was the student ID special.
I was going to say, Mr. Student Discount, yeah.
Yeah, like Mr. Student Discount.
That program was so popular with the Penguins, like people would start showing up at like 8 a.m. to line up to get like the best available seats.
Wow.
And after they got good again, like after Crosby came, obviously that changed everything. People actually wanted to go now. They would, like, for the first maybe like 5 to 6 years of Crosby's career, they would hold like 600 tickets a night to open up to the student rush. And like people again would show up at like ridiculous hours, and players would like bring out pizza to them, and it was like a college like tailgating atmosphere.
Right.
But it was a great program because it got a lot of people hooked on hockey, and we got to watch Randy Robitaille.
Yeah, yeah, we had the Islanders had a student discount thing too, and my friend Gio and I'm a little bit older than you and Mike here, but we used to go to games all the time, but there was not a best available seat. I don't know why that, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't know why the Islanders didn't do that. Cause they used to give us terrible seats. They were like right up against the last row of the Coliseum when nobody was there. And so by the end of the first period, you'd get an usher who would see you up there and he'd kind of like wave you down, like, come on, come on, come on. And then you'd go down to the 200s. It was a much nicer seat, you know, but nothing as good as behind the glass. But hey, listen, you know, sometimes, you know, you gotta do what it takes to get people in the building. But before we move on to more Robitaille, I do want to stay on this because, again, this is an era I don't know if a lot of, you know, younger people know about this. So this, like you said, this was the transitional period between Jagr and Crosby. This was when Mario Lemieux had come back to play, but he was also the owner, which is kind of a weird thing. I remember this is when I was working at the Associated Press, and it was always like player owner, Mario Lemieux. And it was me, a friend and I who were both hockey fans, just like, it's so weird. It's so weird that the owner is playing on, but they had to, like, they needed somebody to play. He was probably their second best player, really. Behind Alexei Kovalev was also on these teams. And it's just kind of like, I get, you know, Mike and I talk about these things all the time. Cause this is what this whole show is about, is kind of carrying this baggage around from these weird transitional eras. We have the mercenary era before the Tavares rebuild. We have the truly, truly dark, awful times between the Ziggy Palfy trade and when Charles Wong bought the team and brought in like Michael Peck and Alexei Yashin. What is like sort of a normal Penguins fan's relationship to this particular era, which again, you know, fits right in between these two super, super, super Hall of Fame superstars. But it's just sort of like, do they look about it fondly? Do they try and forget about it? Does the team kind of like try and just ignore it? Just pretend it doesn't happen. Like what's sort of the relationship like there now after obviously so much success with the Crosby era?
Well, the team itself totally ignores it. Like there's almost no reference to it. Mm-hmm. And like you mentioned Alexei Kovalev, like he was a great player for the Penguins. And like very little memory of him associated with the team. Like there's a mural outside of their locker room that has him. He has like a random picture like in the corner of it, but like they don't really reference that time much. I think fans, especially fans of like my age from that era, they mostly look back at it with fondness because of what it helped produce.
Yeah,
well, like those, everybody knew at the time when they start when they traded Kovalev, when they traded Yager, when Marty Straka got traded. I think that's another weird Islander.
I was gonna say he's gonna get his own episode of this. I promise.
Dick Karnstrom.
But,
Dick Karnstrom, definitely.
Dick Karnstrom, oh my gosh, he led the team in scoring one of these.
Yes.
He was like literally they claimed him on waivers before the start of the season, and he led the team in scoring that year. Like that's how bad they were.
Yeah.
But I think fans knew that, okay, like we're going through a really bad period here. I don't think anybody in their wildest dreams at the time envisioned that they would get two more superstars, like mega stars, like back to back. I don't think anybody anticipated that, but I think people knew that there was at least something of a plan. I also think there's a sense of fondness to it because people were just trying to grasp onto the franchise because the long-term stability of the team was not a given.
Absolutely.
There was even after Crosby arrived, there was still a chance that if they didn't get an arena, they were going to be in Kansas City.
Yeah.
Or some other city. So like, I think people just tried to embrace the team while it was there. They kind of knew that they at least had a vision. They were trying to, you know, build something up. And obviously it produced, you know, 15, 16 years of greatness. And I think that makes it easier to look back on with fondness. Hmm. But I think fans appreciate those 3 years. The organization, you know, it's just like it's a transitional phase between the Lemieux Yager teams and the Crosby Malkin teams, because, you know, for 10 years in the 90s, the Lemieux Yager teams were also really good. They won two cups. And, you know, then obviously Crosby and Malkin did what they've done. But like I also remember another vivid memory I have of that time period actually involves the Islanders in a weird way, because I remember everybody knew Yager's last season in Pittsburgh was his last season in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I remember that.
They went to the Eastern Conference Finals that year. They were a really good team. That was the year Lemieux came back. He came out of retirement after staying out for 3 years and averaged like almost 2 points per game. It was just
sick.
Like in the middle of the dead puck era too, when nobody was scoring. But everybody knew Yager was going to be gone. He wanted out. He made the comment that he was like dying alive, which actually still gets a lot of play. Like people still reference that here because it was just such an absurd quote. And looking back on it in hindsight, it's hilarious. But I remember when they were going into that offseason, and this is obviously before, you know, Twitter and social media and 24/7, you know, rumor mongering. I'd be getting like my trade rumors like once a week from ESPN.com.
Oh yeah.
And I remember the Islanders were one of the teams that got mentioned as a possible landing spot for Jaromir Jagr.
Oh my God.
The Islanders, there was the Rangers, and I think there was one other team. And the rumored offer from the Rangers was just like a bunch of their crap. Like it was bad contracts that they didn't want. And I remember thinking, man, I really want him to go to the Islanders because I really wanted Brad Isbister and Dave Scatcherd as part of the return and the trade.
Wow. Hey, two favorites.
I don't blame you.
Like,
come on.
Like those were the guys I wanted of all the players that were getting rumored. And then he ended up going to Washington for, you know, just three nobodies. Chris Beach was the top guy there.
I remember the Caps sort of coming out of nowhere and people being like, huh? Like, what?
But then like later on, I think that was that the same year the Islanders traded for Yashin and they ended up giving up like, you know, Chara and Jason Spezza? And like,
that would have been, 2001.
Yeah, that would have been the year. So like, they couldn't get that offer. They got Chris Beach and Michael Civic.
Yeah, you could have had Chara, I guess. So wow, I gotta tell you, I'd never heard that. I know going back before this, there was the flirtation with Jeremy Roenick, which I think was kind of Mike Milbury being like, "Hey, JR, you want to play for the Islanders?" And him being like, "Well, if you give me X amount of money," and him being like, "Yeah, that's not gonna happen." It was very, very brief. But I have never heard this Yager thing before. I need to investigate this. That's pretty wild.
I just can't imagine what it was. I want to have my own podcast to listen to what it was like to live through the Mike Mulberry era.
Oh, my God. You don't want to know. Trust me.
The Yashin trade was one of the actual highlights, honestly. Yeah. that's how you know what it was like. But about that Penguins era, like, the Penguins have haunted the Islanders, and not so much like in the recent years, but before Barry Trotz, like, the, you know, Sidney Crosby just lived in our basement basically. And but before Crosby, like, I used to love going to Islander Penguins games for that reason. Like, I'll be like, oh, what, you know, this is a game the Islanders have a good chance to win.
Yeah.
Tomas Sorovi isn't really scaring me, and John Sebastian Aubin or Sebastian Caron in goal, like, the Islanders, I feel like they had like a little bit of a run against the Penguins in those early 2000s, and because I think a lot of the NHL did, but
yeah, a lot of the league did.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. And because they were in the same division, I ended up going, you know, they played a lot more back then in division. So I feel like I saw a ton of these early 2000 Penguins teams. And the one thing I remember about them is I know that, like, they had, what's his face? He ended up going with playing with the Rangers, Roosevelt.
Yes. Oh, Michael Roosevelt, yeah.
And I just was like, this guy, I hated him. I don't know what it was. I can't remember if he, like, plastered maybe Jason Blake or something, but, like, for some reason, I hated him. Mm-hmm. And that hatred obviously didn't go away when he ended up going to the Rangers. Well,
it's funny because that Penguins team, that era, they had a couple of guys on their defense that they were just not very good in Pittsburgh. Michael Roosevelt was one of them. Andrew Ferentz was another.
Yeah.
And those guys ended up playing like almost two decades in the league. Like, it was crazy because they were like the number one and two defensemen on the worst team in hockey. Mm. And they ended up like winning Stanley Cups and having like these extensive careers. I want to say they both played 1,000 games in the league.
I'll give you one. Ian Moran, almost 500 games. He seemed like he never wanted to leave. He's just always around. But this was Joseph Melikar, I remember from that era. To me, that Penguins era, I always remember Darius Kasparaitis, like, having getting traded there and being like, man, what is he doing on this team? It's so weird. But this was a very strange time. Like you said, they're just picking up people left and right, trying to keep the team in Pittsburgh all this time, trying to get a new arena. And let me tell you, we know all about that kind of thing. And so into this will come Randy Robitaille. But let's back it up a little bit and talk about how we got here. So he's from Ottawa originally, went to Miami of Ohio, played there, went undrafted. He's one of the very few weird Islanders we've talked about here who wasn't drafted, was originally signed by the Boston Bruins. And he gets his first shot at the NHL in March of 1997, and on his first shift, in his first game, he gets hit into the boards, and he separates his shoulder, and he is out for the remainder of the season.
Oh, God.
And doing the hitting was Ken Belanger, who was playing for the New York Islanders at the time. So this guy has always been tied to the Islanders.
Kim Sweeney, number 42 for Boston. McLaren, John Roloff are the defense pair. LaPointe for the Islanders works it free. Shoved behind the net by Robitaille, who shoved hard to the boards by Belanger of the Islanders. Kim Sweeney lost it to Lachan.
There was the hard hit. That one at the expense of Robitaille as he gets a taste. Randy Robitaille there. Woo. Welcome to the NHL, young fella.
It's so incredible, Tom. I'm watching this video and I'm like, wait a minute. This is, I think I just read about this. This is his first game. So that's it. His season is done. That would have been his, you know, I guess he was trying to burn off the ELC or whatever. And that's it. He's done. 147 seconds into his first shift, it's over. But he spends another couple of seasons with the Bruins. I guess plays in Providence for a little while. And then it is on to the Nashville Predators. He gets traded by the Bruins to the Atlanta Thrashers. Then for Peter Ferraro, Long Island native, and his brother played for the Islanders, of course, Chris. And then the Thrashers trade Robitaille to the Nashville Predators for tough guy Denny Lambert. And it's in Nashville, again, in the early years, that he really makes his entrance into the NHL. He ends up spending 131 games with the Predators, 20 goals, 51 points. He would play for Atlanta, but it would happen a lot later. He ends up signing with the Kings in July of 2001, and the Kings are who put him on waivers, and that's how he ends up in Pittsburgh. So after, you know, we know how important Robitaille was to the Penguins at some point and to a young Penguins fan such as yourself, but like when they, do you have any memory of them picking him up on waivers? Did you think at the time, wow, this is a good pickup? Or again, was this sort of like a, who the hell is this type of scenario here?
It was a, who the hell is this type of scenario? Because they had so many guys like that come through the team those years that it was just like, well, he'll be here for a couple weeks and that'll be it. And then he had 30 points in 40 games. and then you're mad that, like, why are you going to trade him?
It's actually funny. We'll get to it in a second, but again, his numbers are really weird. Like, he would end up playing 81 games for the Penguins, and he had 47 points.
Yeah.
Like, that's over half a point a game. Like, that's good. What is he doing?
Especially in that era.
Right.
Right.
That was, that was when, like, that was the height of the neutral zone trap.
Right.
And when it was like every game was played in mud. Like, putting up those numbers was no small accomplishment.
Right. It's just funny that, like, and this would continue for his career. He basically was a half a point a game player for an entire career, spanning like 10 different teams over 11 years. It's crazy. It was definitely a muddy, you know, the dead puck era, whatever you want to call it, skating in mud. And it's true. Like, scoring was definitely down at that point. But, like, I don't know, maybe some guys just kind of excel at that point. You were talking before about how even on a bad team, somebody's got to score. That to us is Mario Strakowski, who was a superstar for the Islanders in the two worst seasons they had as a franchise. And I guess Robitaille is kind of one of those guys. Like, I mean, Mike, you obviously are a huge, we'll get to the Islanders Robitaille in a minute, but like you're a guy who's observed this player a lot. I mean, do you remember something about his game that sort of translated into this style of play where he, you know, speed and skill and deeks and dipsy doodles weren't part of the order of the day. Like, this guy was, maybe he's just a meat and potatoes type of guy, and it just worked for him in this era, you think?
I think, you know what he was really good at was, he's a really slick passer, like incredibly slick passer. So back then, you had, the game moved a lot slower, as we were just saying. So you had, like, if you were a step or half a step faster than someone and pulled on the brakes, you ended up having a lot more time than players do now. Like, the skating level is in a completely different universe. So Robitaille was just so good at, when he had time and space, to make the pass to his second option. So he'd have like the obvious one, and it's something we see Matt Barzal do all the time now. Like, you see him coming down on a rush, and you're like, okay, he's on like a semi 2-on-1, there's another guy coming, he can force this through to Bo Horvat or something, and sometimes he does. And then other times you'll see him, and the TV screen can't see it, but Mike Riley or Noah Dobson's coming up the rush on the other way or something else, and he just pulls on the brakes and he makes that pass. And Randy Robitaille, to me, did that really well with the Islanders. And the one team I remember him, well, actually remember him with two other teams besides the Islanders and Penguins, like, in my head. I remember him on the Senators, but that was after the Islanders. Yeah. But I remember him on the Nashville Predators.
Right.
Like you said, that's when he kind of made his mark, I guess. And they had those jerseys with the silver sleeves.
I love
those. Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I can picture him in that number 27 with, he had like the kind of a weird visor going. Yeah. And so I can remember him in those jerseys. I don't remember anything, you know, God, how would you be able to watch a Nashville Predators game from Long Island back then? I have no idea. Right, but I do remember him a little bit, just, and I remember him with the Thrashers too, a bit. So
yeah, I do too.
And of course the Penguins and Islanders, but That's what I remember him. He was such a good facilitator. He was such a good facilitator of the play. He had eyes in the back of his head, and like we were saying, like he had 30 points in 40 games or whatever it ended up being with the Penguins, and in that one season. And if you look at his numbers just down the board with every stop he had, he was basically producing at this just under half a point per game clip. So and there was never any on Long Island, Adam, like I always say, you basically know everything about the team. Like, you know, that they're just kind of in the community. Like, they just live in the suburbs with the rest of us. So rumors get out if like a guy is a prick or has like a bad attitude or whatever. So probably wasn't a bad guy. So it wasn't like that was chasing him around the league. At least we don't think so. So there were, I have no idea. It reminds me a little bit, and I hate myself for saying it, because we hear his name all the time on 32 Thoughts and the Jeff Marek Show, but it reminds me a little bit of like Daniel Sprong, like a guy who just goes, does the tour, produces everywhere, then signs another deal. But yeah, he was just silky, man. He had great skates. He had the silver skates as well. Like, he had really cool silver skates, and just a player that I think if he was in this era that we're in now, he's playing, you know, a thousand NHL games. And I mean, he ended up, which the crazy part here is a lot of times when we talk about these journeymen, they end up with in their career with like 160 games played, and one stop they have like 60, and that's the team that they played with the most. And Robitaille played 531 NHL games. So it wasn't like he did it. He was just like your kind of run of the mill 3 or 4 year journeyman who kind of just Jason Krogged his way around the NHL. Right. Like, this guy played 531 games.
It's crazy.
And in his last year too, he wasn't bad. He had 29 points in 68 games. So we got to find out. And he's come to alumni night a couple times on with the Islanders. We got to ask him, be like, do you think that you deserve better? Like, what the hell? Yeah.
We'll talk about what he's doing now at the end here. But yeah, I mean, he was a productive player. I mean, Adam, do you remember any particular line mates he was with, or any kind of, you know, particular spots he was in, or the power play or something like that? I mean, he had a couple of power play goals I see for the Penguins here. I mean, what else can you recall about that time?
It's funny. I was literally just sitting here trying to think of who he played alongside with. I'm guessing at the time, given the state of the roster at that point, and given how productive he was, he was probably getting significant time with Kovalev.
Yeah.
Like on the, cause I mean, he was one of the only guys producing. I can't picture who he played with, but I can picture the skates, and I can picture the playmaking. Like, he was a very good, he saw the ice well. He had good vision. He could make plays. I wish I could think of who he played alongside. It's totally escaping me.
I mean, teams like that, you kind of just are all over the place. Like, I couldn't tell you who Tchaikovsky played with, because he was kind of all over the place that time too. But that's pretty wild. So I mean, he's a productive guy, but obviously the Penguins at that time are, you know, a bit of a turnstile. They're kind of just trying to find anything to grab a hold of, like you said. And on March 9th of 2003, which is going to end up being a big day for the Islanders, Robitaille is traded from the Penguins to the Islanders for a fifth round pick in 2003. So what can you tell us about fifth round choice Evgeny Iskakov?
Absolutely nothing.
There you go. Well, of course not, because he didn't play in the NHL. Couple of guys. So that was in the fifth round. A couple of guys who went after him. I'm just looking here. Mark Mathot went first pick in the sixth round. Islanders legend Nate Thompson went a little bit later. Some guy named Joe Pavelski went a little while after that. And then in the ninth round, though, the Penguins made up for it by drafting a guy named Matt Molson. So how about that? So yeah, so fifth round pick. Not too bad, I guess, for a guy you picked up on waivers who's pretty good. Although, again, you'd think that those numbers would have gotten a little something more for the Penguins. But as an aside, this is also the same day that Mike Milbury, in acquiring, sending out a fifth round pick to acquire Randy Robitaille, traded Claude Lapointe to Philly for a different fifth round pick. And as we told our friend Bill Matz when we did our episode on Ron Hextall, he's like, you know, we should do a Weird Flyers podcast. And I was like, you can go ahead and do that, but we need to be on for the Claude Lapointe episode because he's a favorite of ours. But I remember that was a tough one when they traded Claude.
That was, yeah.
So he was the prototypical, this guy's way too good to be on this team. And on a good team, this guy is the perfect depth piece, but on the Islanders, he is the imperfect first or second line center. Like, he really shouldn't be playing that position. But yeah, this is where Randy Robitaille's first stint with the Islanders begins, and it's a short one. It's only 10 games. He has one goal, two assists. This team did go to the playoffs. They lost to the Ottawa Senators. I don't know if this is really where he made a connection yet. I mean, Mike, you were still young at this time, but we've talked about this era being very, very formative for you. Do you remember specifically this period of Robitaille, like the sort of Robitaille 1.0 period?
Well, I remember the trade because I remember reading, you know, you'd find out about trades in the newspaper, basically. Yeah. And I remember reading it and being really upset about Claude Lapointe because at that age, I was like,
me too.
Okay, I get trading for players, but I don't really understand why you trade away a player who's as good as Claude Lapointe. And that was tough to handle. And then I think because they would write like the main article, like Islanders trade away Claude Lapointe, whatever. And then like at the bottom, there would just be like the notes section of the article. And it was just like, oh, and by the way, like they acquired this guy from the Penguins and for a fifth round pick. And so no, I actually don't remember much from Robitaille 1.0, but I do know that when they reacquired him, I remembered him being on the Islanders, and I'm like, wait, they got Randy Robitaille back.
Yeah, me too.
Hilarious.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, the second one I remember, and then I remember thinking to myself during that second period, when did they get rid of him? I didn't even realize they had gotten rid of him. But so it was a short stint. In August of 2003, he signed with the Atlanta Thrashers and actually spent a whole season down there. He had 11 goals, 37 points, and 69 games for the Thrashers. This was not their one playoff year, in case you're wondering. He ends up signing at the end of that season with Nashville, but he doesn't end up playing there again. He ends up being put on waivers in October of the season, maybe even before it starts, ends up playing in Minnesota. If they have a Weird Wild podcast, I guarantee he'll get an episode of that too. Now again, 67 games, 40 points. I mean, those are good numbers. Like I don't remember him playing for the Wild at all. This is kind of a shock to me, but that's a good number. But I guess it wasn't good enough because they let him walk. He signs with the Flyers. Nobody remembers this era at all. So he signs with the Flyers on July 4th of 06. By December of that year, he is traded to the Islanders again.
Sent Mike York to the city of brotherly love for centerman Randy Robitaille, who led the Flyers with a 53.6 faceoff winning percentage. In 28 games, Robitaille has tallied 5 goals and 12 assists, while York has amassed 6 goals and 7 assists in 32 games this season.
By the Philadelphia Flyers, and a guy he coached briefly this year, is now an Islander. His first game back at the Coliseum, Randy Robitaille, faceoff coming right up.
And this is sort of where the bulk of the Robitaille memories come from, I think, for Islanders fans. With a fifth-round pick, and in exchange, the Flyers got Mike York. I remember playing for the Islanders. You know, it seemed like he was going to be a lot better. He was acquired from Michael Pekka. That was never going to work out for poor Mike York. I feel bad for him. Nobody wanted to see Michael Pekka traded, and certainly not for an ex-Ranger. So we could do a whole deep dive on Mike York at some point. But this is one of my favorite fun facts of this entire show, and I can't, but my mind has been blown for an entire weekend after figuring this out and finding this out. So Robitaille and a fifth round pick come to the Islanders for Mike York. Obviously, Robitaille plays the rest of the season for them. That fifth round pick was used in the 2008 draft to take a man out of Sarnia named Matt Martin, who is still currently on the Islanders in the year 2024. And that is mind boggling. That is absolutely mind boggling. Adam, we did an episode on Peter Regan, who signed with the Islanders to play with his buddy Franz Nielsen. Didn't work out. They traded him to Chicago. The Islanders sent that pick to Washington for the rights to Yaroslav Halak. The Caps traded that pick to the Rangers, and the Rangers used it to take a guy named Igor Shesterkin.
Wow.
So somehow Peter Regan turned into Igor Shesterkin. This isn't quite as mind blowing as that, but seeing Matt Martin here is pretty wild. But yeah, this is sort of the, now as a Robitaille fan yourself, like, did you wake up at some point during this era and be like, holy crap, why is Randy Robitaille on the Islanders again? Like, this is kind of a weird, this is like true journeyman shit. Like, he'd played for 8 different teams. But like, do you have any recollection of him playing for the Islanders and maybe torturing the Penguins at some point?
I have a very vague memory of the Ryan Malone hat trick game.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, because I remember him getting the hat trick, and I remember, I don't know that I remember that it was Randy Robitaille scoring, like taking over the game. I don't remember that part, but I do have a vivid memory of that particular game. But yeah, the Randy Robitaille part escaped me.
The Penguins were white hot at that time, yeah, too. That's why it was such like a big game and a crossroads at that season. And the weirdness of this trade is doesn't end with the Matt Martin thing. The Islanders made 2 trades with the Flyers within a week that year.
Mm-hmm.
So they traded York for Robitaille, and then like 3 days later or 3 days before that, they traded Zhitnik for Freddie Meyer.
That's right.
It did 2 separate trades with the Flyers. So on December 16th, they traded Zhitnik, and then on December 20th of that same year, they traded Mike York to the Flyers for Robitaille. So just really weird.
It should be noted, though, that so now Robitaille, again, this is his second time with the Islanders. He was acquired by 2 separate Islanders general managers. One was Mike Milbury, and this time it was Garth Snow.
Right.
So
yeah,
I think
true.
He's probably the first person to have ever had that kind of distinction.
Right. And the names, like the trade trees here, are crazy because that Zhitnik ends up turning into Braden Coburn, who ends up finishing his career with the Islanders. Did he retire right after his 1 game stint with the Islanders? Good God. But I was kind of digging Mike York when they first traded for him. I was like, this is kind of cool. Like, I remember him, that rookie of the year with the Rangers. And then he was, he was like decent enough with those Oilers. And think, he could skate. He also had pretty cool skates himself. He had those same kind of silver skates that Robitaille had, actually. But it got old pretty quickly. It got pretty stale with Mike York pretty quickly. And he ends up with a pretty forgettable season and a half. And but when they traded for Robitaille, I was pretty excited because the Islanders ended up that this season just having such a funny roster. It was such a mercenary team. You look at the roster and basically nobody is homegrown outside of DiPietro and Campoli. Franz Nielsen comes in and out. You could say Trent Hunter was homegrown too, because they didn't draft him, but he was basically, a lifelong Islander. But Robitaille comes into this team, and he gets put on he's a center, or he can play left wing, I think, at center, and he ends up playing with like Viktor Kozlov, who in a weird way was just the Russian version of and a better player than Randy Robitaille, but the same kind of player, like very crafty.
Yeah.
Smart, slick guys who maybe they didn't think too much of the defensive side of the game, but when they got the puck on their stick and they had time, they were either scoring or finding someone open. And I just remember Robitaille having instant chemistry with Chris Simon, of all people.
Yes. Yeah.
Because Simon had a pretty good shot that was like an underrated shot, and Robitaille just found him. And Robitaille slotted in and obviously wasn't going to come in and take over like the top line with the team with Yashin and Shatan and Kozlov. Blake was that was the year Blake scored 40. So and then you had the Sillinger Hunter Hilbert line is like a really good checking line. Richard Park on that 4th line staple, whether it would be with like Franz Nielsen, whoever was like rotating in as down there. So like Aaron Asham and Chris Simon, like they would play a lot together, I feel like. And Robitaille made them good. Like he made these guys good because he just would find them. He'd draw a defender down or towards him, and then you would find Chris Simon on like 2-on-1 or something, and Simon would deposit it, or Asham would hit his one timer, which was pretty good. And he Robitaille, in a weird way, kind of changed the season and gave the Islanders this very passable middle six. And of that group, of that middle six, like, he was so much fun to watch, I thought. And it was really, you know, they end up going to the playoffs in that wild run. He played a pretty big part in the entire season.
This was the Ryan Smith year.
Yes. Yeah, I mean,
they went all in and got
who was the bigger trade at that season? I don't know. Like, it's hard to tell. But they he had a huge hand in this season.
Yeah.
And then he was gone.
Yeah. Just like that. This is, boom. He was gone.
Just gone.
Again, though, the pattern continues. 50 games, 6 goals, 23 points. So again, just under half a point a game. It's so funny. It's crazy. But yeah, he shows up and who is the real Captain Canada here? Is it Ryan Smith or is it Randy Robitaille? I think might be Randy Robitaille. But yeah, so he's gone just like that, just in a flash. He's left, and you know, again, this was, you know, the Islanders were also trying to just piece people together and put a team together. And Smith obviously left that summer. Blake left. I think that was, they also bought out Yashin. So big changes were coming. And then within a year of that, they really bottomed out in 07-08 and then got the Tavares pick in 09. Robitaille ended up playing for his hometown Ottawa Senators. He signed there in 2007. And again, this may, you know, surprise you, 68 games, 10 goals, 29 points. So again, just under half a point a game, maybe a little bit less. But then he starts the sort of international tour. He did play in the AHL in San Antonio for a while. He played in Russia. He played in Switzerland. Played for 3 different teams in the KHL, 2 different teams in the Swiss League, and just kind of disappeared from the radar. But like, Adam, you know, Randy Robitaille, I always ask, like, people on this show, you know, do you have any recollection of him, you know, playing in Europe or playing for Russia or any of these other places? But, you know, Robitaille is one of those guys that just sort of, like, when he drops off the radar, he's just gone. And then, like, maybe in a quiet moment, you think to yourself, man, how great was Randy Robitaille when he played for the Penguins? Like, has this guy come up on your radar at all at any point since, you know, 2007 when he signed with the Senators?
He's one of those guys that he just disappears as mysteriously as he arrived.
That's right. Yeah, he's like Batman.
He's
yeah.
just gone. you know, I think I've thought about Randy Robitaille probably more often than most Penguins fans have, just because of my own personal memories of that era and going to games and falling in love with going to hockey games. Because when I was a kid, I didn't get to a lot of hockey games because I was growing up in the peak of the Lemieux years, and I came from a very, you know, blue collar family. Like, we didn't have a lot of money. We could go to baseball games, but hockey games was just a price level that we could not get to. So I never actually had a chance to go to games. So it wasn't until the Student Rush program came in that I got to go a lot, and just going to games regularly and seeing live NHL hockey was just such a thrill for me. And I just have memories of those teams. I have fond memories of them. And, you know, Randy Robitaille.
It's pretty, I know. He's just one of these guys. It's just like, he's there and he's so important so quickly. I mean, I have videos here. He loved to score against the Flyers for some reason. Maybe he was angry about his short stint there.
Play by Picard there, stepping in front of Robitaille. Martina pinches. Sanderson can't clear it past him. So Chatan feeds it down low. Robitaille scores! Well, it started with an effective pinch by Radek Martinuk, and Randy Robitaille makes it 1-0 New York. And
he
can pinch
there. He scored in a shootout winner over the Leafs, which was like a really, really impressive goal. This is pre-Franz Nielsen. Back, you know, the Islanders would go through a period when they won every shootout, thanks mainly to Franz Nielsen. But before that, you needed a Randy Robitaille, apparently.
Radek Robitaille is going to be the third Islander shooter.
Randy Robitaille. Here he goes. Taking it wide.
Has to score. Good play here by Robitaille. Takes the shot and then gets it up into the top of the net.
Shooting third for Toronto, number 23, Alexei Monogorovsky.
Randy Robitaille with a go-ahead goal.
Deflected there by the poke check of Di Pietro.
The Islanders are 6-4 in the shootout this year. None bigger than right there.
What a play by the goaltender Di Pietro to poke check the puck off the stick of Ponikarovsky.
He's just one of those guys that, like, you look back and you're like, man, without this guy, this team never makes the playoffs. They never do anything. And that, like Mike said, that was just a wild year. Even before, that was Garth Snow's first year at the helm. So it started out like, wait, who's the GM now? And ends up with him trading for Ryan Smith. He ends up winning the Hockey News GM of the year, and they go to the playoffs, and it's just a wild ride. And Randy Robitaille was as much a part of that as anybody else. These days, Randy Robitaille has not left the game. He is, in fact, an agent, and he's on LinkedIn if you want to go find him there. And like, one of his clients is Brant Clark, who plays for the Kings. And he hasn't left the game. Like Mike said, he's been at alumni days, and I'm glad that he recognizes that his Islanders time is, like, fondly remembered. Like, we always talk about what do guys think that their, like, legacy is, and I think Randy Robitaille is acutely aware of his legacy as an Islander. I don't know if he's going to any Predators alumni games, even though he played twice as many games for them. But Adam, you were saying when we were talking about coming on, there's one aspect of Randy Robitaille that we haven't really gotten to, and that is, in fact, his last name. Now, Randy, for those who may not know, is in no relation to the great Luke Robitaille, the highest scoring left wing in the history of the NHL, and obviously a Kings Hall of Famer, and I guess it's everybody Hall of Famer now. Apparently, you and were there when somebody asked Randy about this, and it didn't go well in a parking lot somewhere.
So one of the many student rush games, one of the friends that I went with, he was a huge autograph seeker,
right?
And like, we were high school kids, like, you know, and he knew where the Penguins parking lot was. And we would always go and hang out after games, and he would get his autographs. And I had nothing to get signed, so I was just wearing, like, a blank, like, Penguins jersey. And I had the player, as they came out, they would just sign the logo. And, like, I have a jersey hanging in my basement that is autographed by about two-thirds of one of the worst Penguins teams in franchise history. And that's Randy amazing. Robitaille is included on
awesome.
That jersey.
Awesome.
I think Kovalev is the most prominent name on there.
Right.
But other than Randy Robitaille, of course. but there was one particular night where we were all waiting there, and Randy Robitaille comes out, and he's being really friendly with everybody. He's just happy that, like, people are talking to him. He's
right.
happy to sign everything. Like, he's just being really polite. He's engaging in it's a very genuine moment that he's having with people, that, you know, he's like, hey, thanks for coming out. Thanks for supporting us. Sorry we couldn't win. Like, you know, just really friendly. And I vividly remember, and this is one of my top Randy Robitaille moments. The guy standing next to me as he's signing something asks him, are you related to Luke? I've never seen a person's entire mood and demeanor change more rapidly than in that moment. It must be a question he has been asked from
sure.
the moment he started playing hockey.
Absolutely.
Like, from the moment he started playing professional hockey, everybody probably assumed, whoa, he's got to be related to Luke Robitaille. And I cannot even imagine what it has to be like to work your way to the pinnacle of your profession, make it to the highest level, and the first thing people ask is, are you related to somebody else?
Yeah. Like, somebody way better than you, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. I just vividly remember Robitaille immediately turning and staring daggers through the guy. Like, if looks could kill, this guy would have been dead four times.
Oh, my God.
And he just very sternly and, like, almost aggressively just goes, no. And he went back to signing autographs.
That's funny.
the guy that asked, he was like absolutely horrified. Like,
sure,
like,
yeah.
Like, oh my God. And it's funny because Luke actually spent one season with the Penguins.
Yeah.
And a lot of people forget that. It was the 94-95 lockout season.
Yeah.
So there was only like 40 games that year, but he played one season with the Penguins. So Luke was a very prominent, name in Penguins history. So I get why the guy asked, but like, yeah, that might have been,
that's really funny.
That's one of my top, like, probably that was the incident that made me want to pick Randy Robitaille, just because I vividly remember that.
That's
and
amazing.
Just how just like you could just see in that moment how many times he's been asked it, how many times he's had to answer it, and just I'm an NHL player too. I'm good.
Right.
Like, I belong here. Like, I got here on my own. And it was a really, in hindsight, really funny thing to watch play out.
That is really funny.
Up until that point, Randy Robitaille was like one of the friendliest guys that came out.
That's the trick. Don't ever ask him about Luke. I will never forget that Luke Robitaille played for the Penguins, because I remember going to a theater in 1996, I want to say, and watching a little movie called Sudden Death.
That's right.
The great Jean-Claude Van Damme. And they're the Penguins. In the movie, the Penguins are in the Stanley Cup final. And Luke Robitaille is on the team. And at that point, he had already been traded to the Rangers. And so my friends and I all went, when did they make this movie? Like, Luke Robitaille has been a Ranger for like half a season. Wow. Okay. So
one of the funniest things about that is Luke Robitaille was, I believe, the only actual, well, there were two actual NHL players in that movie.
Mm.
Luke Robitaille was one of them.
Right.
And he like used his real name. Mm. The other one was former longtime Pittsburgh Penguin, Jay Caulfield.
Right.
Jay Caulfield played the Penguins goalie by the name of Brad Tolliver. Now, the reason that the Penguins goalie's name was Brad Tolliver was because the Penguins goalie at the time, Tom Barrasso, was the only player on the Penguins or the Chicago Blackhawks that would not let the movie use his name.
Oh, wow.
And I like to imagine that that is why they made the Penguins goalie just the biggest asshole on that team. And all they did was they flipped the initials from TB to BB.
Right.
And
that's really funny. Oh, man. Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Wow, look at that. NHL trivia, movie trivia. You get it all in this episode. I love it. I love it. That's amazing. Now I'm going to go watch Sudden Death again. That's amazing. That's an amazing story. This whole episode has been amazing. Adam, I can't thank you enough. I hope you've had a lot of fun.
Oh, I have.
So just flipping back to current day Penguins real quick. We're Islanders fans, obviously. We're not going to see eye to eye, I think, on a lot of things. Where do you think the Penguins go from here? I mean, are they going to try and band-aid this up and try and make a run with these guys again next year? Like you said, a lot of guys are on long-term deals. Or do you think they finally start moving some of these guys and try and get at least a little bit younger and start to think about a life without Crosby in them?
Well, I think they're going to get a little bit younger, but I don't think that they're going to totally tear it down just yet. I think as long as Sid is still playing at a high level, they're probably going to try to do that kind of rebuild on the fly sort of thing as long as they can. And it would not surprise me on July 1st, the day he's allowed to sign a new extension, that he probably signs like a 2 or 3 year deal just to finish his career. Because that would match up with what Letang and Malkin and now Carlson have left. I think as long as those guys are here, they're not going anywhere. They have no movement clauses. They have no desire to move.
Yeah.
That never works out well for anybody, but I think that's the way it's going to go.
So, sounds a lot like the Islanders, actually. So it'll be fun to see these two teams see how they can, you know, patch everything up in the same division. And I guarantee there's at least one more playoff series in these two teams probably before it's all said and done. Tell everybody where they can find you. Again, you're all over Twitter, and if you're not following Adam, you definitely should be. But where can everybody find your work so they can hear more about it? The Penguins,
yeah,
from a good Penguins fan, I got to say. There's a lot out there that are a little sketchy, but Adam's one of the good ones, so definitely follow him.
Yeah, you can find me at Pensburg. You can find me at Bleacher Report. Do a lot of NHL stuff there. You can find me over at Yard Barker, where I do pretty much every sport. but for hockey stuff, Pensburg, Bleacher Report, and on Twitter, at A Gretz.
There you go. Thank you so much, Adam. We really appreciate you coming on. I hope you had a good time.
I did. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Mike, where can everybody find you on Twitter?
The Big Lee Basket with two E's.
Follow Mike at the Big Lee Bowski. Read and listen to his work at Action Network. Of course, read Lighthouse Hockey every single day for your most up-to-date Islanders news and discussion. Our theme song is Knuckles by Bjorn Falk. Find more of his music on Bandcamp and at Spotify. Shop VintageIceHockey.com. Try wines from the Pinot Project. Any final thoughts on Islanders hero Randy Robitaille asking players if they're related to better players than they are and angering them after games? We've covered a lot here, so you have the floor.
When I'm telling you, I'm not being hyperbolic, I promise it. And hearing a fan of a different team watch a different version of Randy Robitaille say a similar thing really validates this claim, which was and I think that if you know meme is kind of a cliche at this point. But if you watched Randy Robitaille in that 2006-2007 season, there was a point where you thought to yourself, this might be the best player on the planet. Yeah. And then he was gone. And he was playing for the San Antonio Rampage not that long after. So, Randy, what a pleasure it was, man. It was such a pleasure. Thank you. That season was such a magical run. You played a huge part in it. I'll never forget your skates. And I'll never forget that win over the Penguins on February 17th, 2007. Just 10 days, I think, before they traded for Ryan Smith. And he played a huge part in that one. Marc-Andre Fleury in those yellow pads. I can see Marc-Andre Fleury skating after, you know how he would do that little skate after he let up a goal, like to the corner in those, and he was wearing those macaroni and cheese pads. And Randy Robitaille, he was a special one. So I've been,
that's why I remember that game so vividly. February 17th is my birthday.
Wow. That was an exciting birthday. Oh my gosh. Ryan Malone hat trick, Randy Robitaille just laying waste to the Penguins, aren't yellow pads. Oh man. Well, that's crazy. Oh, the mystery solved. Oh my goodness. This has been a wild ride. And thank you, Randy Robitaille. And thank you, Adam Gretz. And thank you, Michael Leboff. And thank you all for listening. Make sure to check out Fans First Sports Network, which is where we are at. And again, read Lighthouse Hockey every single day. Thanks a lot. We'll be back in another couple of weeks with a new episode. Until then, keep the Islanders weird. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.